requires a lot of skill and technology to get a pilot above 21,000 meters, where the U-2 snaps critical images and gathers intelligence. 1 hour prior to takeoff, the pilot begins inhaling pure oxygen to cut the risk of decompression sickness. Major Colby Coons of the U.S. Air Force 5th Reconnaissance Black Cat Squadron says it is like being atop Mount Everest.
I haven't had any decompression sickness problems, so that's good, but we are susceptible to it. Guys who start getting those symptoms will feel pain in their joints, and it could get worse from that.
Landing the spy plane, nicknamed the Dragon Lady, also requires unique abilities. The pilot, sometimes finishing a grueling flight of up to 12 hours, has poor forward visibility in the cockpit. Because the wide-wing jet has an unusual bicycle-type landing gear, a second pilot in a very fast car on the runway chases each landing, radioing observations to his colleague in the cockpit to help him maintain a full stall at precisely 60 centimeters off the ground. When the U-2s return from flights, the Black Cat's maintenance team, overseen by Lieutenant Danielle Rogowski, tracks about 150 items on the jet which need to be replaced at certain intervals.
Flying that high in the altitude, you do a significant amount of wear and tear on the aircraft, and a lot of these components, you get a lot of with the temperature changes and the temperature extremes, puts a lot of pressure on them.
The first U-2 took to the skies in 1955. Originally, the Air Force provided the squadron commanders and logistical support, while the Central Intelligence Agency supplied operations officers, pilots, and mission planners. A newer version, 40% larger than the original U-2, was produced in the 1980s. In the 1990s, the U-2s were outfitted with new engines.
They pull so much in, and you're not burning them.
Major Carl Mangle, sitting in the cockpit prior to a low-altitude training session in a relatively new U-2 built in the 1980s, points out the U.S. Air Force also still has bombers from the 1950s.
So by other Air Force weapon system standards, it's relatively new. And you can take a look at the inside of the cockpit and then the wiring throughout the jet, the motor, and then especially the sensors that we have on board. That stuff is all state-of-the-art. It's advanced. So I feel real comfortable with flying an aircraft that is, you know, technically 50-plus years old.
One reason the U-2 was designed to fly very high was to avoid being shot down. But that is precisely what happened in 1960 when a Soviet missile struck one of the spy planes. Pilot Francis Gary Powers, whose CIA U-2 was recovered nearly intact, was captured. He was put on trial in Moscow and convicted of espionage. In addition to the traditional Cold War-era intelligence missions, U-2s also now provide real-time assistance to troops in combat zones, such as Afghanistan.
It's evolved as it's needed to evolve. It is cutting edge right now and very well could go out into the future if necessary.
Its future has been questionable for some time. The Defense Department 5 years ago intended to begin retiring the fleet, but Congress insisted the spy planes stay aloft until unmanned reconnaissance aircraft are capable of taking over its critical missions. The Air Force now says that will happen in 2015. Global Hawk RQ-4 drones can assume the U-2's missions, some 60 years after the venerable spy plane first took to the skies. Steve Herman, VOA News, Osan Air Base, South Korea.